Hi there, I'm Carly Kloss, and this is TechSetters Podcast, hosted by the brilliant Samantha Weiner and Jenny Wang, made possible by our friends at If Then. If Then is founded on the belief that if we support a woman in STEM, then she can change the world. This series is about telling the human stories behind our greatest innovations, inspiring open conversations with the very people changing our world through tech. In every episode, Jenny and Sam meet the most game-changing COOs and CTOs, founders and engineers, inventors and mentors, showing that behind so many of our favorite products are women just like us, dreaming of new ways to connect, create, and experience the world around us. Here at Code with Klossy, we've realized that you can't be what you can't see, and telling these stories has the power to inspire, motivate, and change the world, turning every one of you listeners into a future legendary guest. As Chief Philanthropy Officer and CEO of the Salesforce Foundation, Ebony Beckwith fuels Salesforce's philanthropic engine. She's responsible for the company's philanthropic investment strategy, overseeing a global team that fosters a culture of giving back and directing hundreds of millions of dollars in grants focused on education and workforce development programs. Additionally, she leads Salesforce's community response to hyper-relevant issues, including COVID-19, and co-leads a task force committed to racial equality and justice. Ebony extends her leadership through her service on the boards of the Warriors Community Foundation, Hamilton Families, and the Women's Funding Network, and as an advisory board member for PagerDuty.org, Europe, Bay Area, and Women Who Code. She has been recognized as one of San Francisco Business Times' most influential women in Bay Area business and was also honored with the 2020 Powerful Women of the Bay Award. Ebony holds a bachelor's degree in computer information systems and an honorary doctorate of humane letters from Golden Gate University. I hope you enjoy.
So welcome to TechSetters, Ebony. We're so excited.
Thank you for that warm welcome. I'm really excited to be here with you all today.
To kick things off, Sam and I both studied computer science in college, and we're super passionate about inspiring more young women to either study CS and also pursue different roles in the technology industry. And you also received a degree in computer information systems from Golden Gate University. So can you tell us about your first introduction to STEM and what ultimately led you to pursue a career in technology?
Great question. Yeah, because I work in philanthropy now, a lot of people actually don't know that I spent the first 15 years of my career in very technical roles. I started my career working in technology and IT operations for a bank, as I mentioned before, and I was leading their credit card technology division. So I definitely know my way around a data center. I built two data centers from scratch, one here in the Bay Area and one in Texas. But my decision to pursue a degree in STEM really didn't come until after I started working. I went to junior college first, and I had to work to support myself right after high school. But what happened for me is I felt like when I was entered into the workforce, I felt like I had really gone as far as I could professionally without a four-year degree, which at the time was a requirement to reach the executive level. It's a totally different world than it was 20 years ago. So now I feel like, you know, at that point, I felt like it was something that I needed to do in order to go further. And I kind of fell into computer science. It's a funny story. I remember just being on Mission Street in San Francisco, seeing a bus ad. So I was at a bus stop. There was an ad for the college and it said computer science and maybe something like make a lot of money. And I felt like the decision was literally right in front of me. And I went home and looked into it, and kind of the rest is history.
Wow. Thank God for that marketing campaign.
I'm telling you.
That's amazing. Perfect targeting also. Was there like a breakthrough moment in your career early on that helped you feel solid in your path going forward? And how did it shape your direction?
There are so many, but if I had to pick just one, I would say that joining Salesforce was a real turning point for me in my career for a lot of reasons. But one of the biggest ones being that up until that point, I had spent a lot of my time in my job, my previous job, really trying to fit in. As I mentioned, I was working in banking, so I'd wear boxy suits. I'd pull my hair back into a bun. I would wear glasses that were they had lenses in them, but they weren't prescription lenses. They were fake glasses in order to appear older than I was. So it was really exhausting. And I remember thinking to myself that the next company I join, I want to be 100% myself. And that really started with my interview at Salesforce. It was really scary. I mean, it sounds silly now, but it was really scary to go outside my comfort zone and to be the me that I wanted to be. I'd always worn black, brown, beige, khaki, tan to work, you know, in my big old suits. And I was like, I'm going to wear something I like. I think I wore a pencil skirt. My hair was down. I had my contacts in. I was feeling good. I spoke passionately about what I wanted and what I was looking for. I did my research and I showed up and I felt so good about myself and I got the job and I haven't looked back since. So I think the moral of the story is to when I bring my full self to work, I'm so much better for it, right? And so that's a story that I keep with me and as a reminder of, you know, just wanting to be authentic in all of my interactions.
That's a story we'll keep with us too. Thank you so much for sharing it. And let's talk about Salesforce, which is an incredible company. I actually live 3 blocks from the Salesforce Tower in SF. So the Salesforce Park is like my jam. Ebony, you are currently the Chief Philanthropy Officer and CEO of the Salesforce Foundation, where you oversee a global team that directs hundreds of millions of dollars in grants focused on education and workforce development. And more recently, you've been involved in all sorts of projects from COVID-19 relief to a task force committed to racial equality and justice. A lot of people have talked about how COVID-19 has caused more racial discrimination or inequality than ever before. And so I'm curious, how have you seen that in terms of retention in the tech industry for people of color or other underrepresented communities?
So that's a really good question. I actually just read last week a great new report from the Board List on women and the future of work. And in the report, it stated that women's participation in the workforce is the lowest that it's been in 30 years. And without participation, you know, we know that there's no representation. And I absolutely believe that companies have a role to play in keeping women engaged at work. And I think one of the biggest opportunities that stands out to me is more support for moms. We know that COVID placed an extraordinary demands on parents, from lack of childcare to adapting to online learning, crowded family homes, you know, no place to have the kids go do school and your parents do work, just really hard. And I really saw it firsthand with my own team that the struggle is real. So I think companies really need to offer more benefits and be more flexible to help ease the burden on working moms. I also saw through COVID, I think we all saw this, is there's another opportunity for mental health. That same report actually mentioned that women are 65% more likely to say their mental health has declined over the course of the pandemic than men. And we've seen this kind of bubble to the surface lately, you know, just with the Olympics. Think about Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles, like, really making room for self-care, I think. Like in this last week especially, I've thought like self-care is no longer a nice to have. It's something that companies really have to embrace to make sure that we keep everyone in the workforce, but especially women, because I think we have added, you know, familiar pressure that's on us. And I think while these examples may seem really grim, I'm actually pretty hopeful that we're talking about it instead of burying things under the rug, because if we have awareness, then that means there's an opportunity for us to make change.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed a shift in just having discussions about not just glamorizing, you know, the grind of working yourself and burnout, and really trying to think about how do we build longevity and how do we like sustain this momentum and enthusiasm for the work that we're doing. And you know, I thought your examples of Naomi and Simone are amazing, just because I can't even fathom that level. And the fact that they were willing to take a stand is really, really inspiring.
It's trend setting. I mean, it used to be like 20 years ago, in order to get a promotion, it was, oh, I was working at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, or my boss calls me at all hours of the day and night. Those actions, those behaviors aren't healthy. They're not sustainable long-term. They lead to health problems. They lead to stress, which leads to health problems. So I think we have to stop, like you said, glamorizing the grind and really just talk about normalizing taking care of yourself.
100%. What's so inspiring is just, I want to shout out like some of the Code with Colossi scholars, because I feel like they're taking all of these amazing principles and they're using their new coding superpowers to create websites that better their communities, increasing access to voter information, climate change, and advocating for women's rights. What problem, from your perspective, should our listeners be building technology-driven solutions for? What should people be thinking about?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't think there's just one thing. I think the beauty of, I mean, I was seeing people dial in, they were saying from Egypt, from Spain, from California, from, you know, there were so many places, the Philippines. Here's the great thing, and like, I guess the opportunity and the challenge, right? Is that there are problems happening everywhere. So a problem in Egypt is going to be different than a problem in the Philippines, going to be different than the problem in California. But we have collectively, we have so many people working on these problems. So for me, it's look outside your own backyard, you know, look outside the doors of your house, and you figure out what those problems are that need to be solved. And then work with a team of other scholars to help solve them. Like collectively, we're going to figure out these problems. I'm working on a talk track, a speech for something I have to give next week. And really it's about togetherness and how we're stronger when we work together. So I love that, you know, we can solve global challenges, we can solve local challenges, we can solve individual challenges by putting our, just, you know, identifying what they are. So I can't really narrow down. I mean, there are so many big things like homelessness and lack of education and no access to meaningful work. And there's so many challenges out there. What I know is that when I pick something that I'm passionate about, then I will really go all out to solve it. So pick a passion project for you and then go work on that.
That actually ties into our next question, which is about leadership. One of our TechCetters guests earlier this season told us that leadership is service. And I feel like you're the perfect example of that. Beyond everything you do at Salesforce Foundation, you also serve on the boards of a number of organizations like the Warriors Community Foundation and Women Who Code. So how would you describe your leadership style and what legacy do you hope to have?
I think it kind of goes back to that title, my honorary title, of Chief Mentoring Officer, because I just love to mentor and help others. So I think that's because I was really fortunate enough to grow up with a very supportive mom and plenty of really amazing mentors to help me along my path. But I recognize that not everyone has someone like them in their corner cheering them on. So I really like to be that for others. So one of the things I say is connect the dots and get out of the way. That's, to me, it's true of both my mentorship and my leadership style. I'm really about opening up doors for other people, but it's really up to them to walk through them. So I think that that would be more of my leadership style, is to connect those dots, be a cheerleader when they need me to, be a coach when I need to be a coach. There's a difference between a coach and a cheerleader, two different roles. And I want to be that support for the people who come behind me.
I think this is my new aspirational career, to be Chief Mentoring Officer, because everything you're saying resonates so deeply. And in addition to being able to be this connector and mentor, sometimes people look at mentors as the people to go to for advice. And it can be hard to imagine someone as accomplished as yourself facing obstacles. So I wanted to ask you if you can tell us about a time that you made a mistake and how you bounced back from it.
I make a ton of mistakes. And I think that's really good for people to know. It's like you said, I think you see people who are executives, you see people who are, you think are succeeding, and you think that they're perfect because we show up, you know, all polished and glossy and, you know, well-spoken and all those things, right? But you don't see some of the mistakes I make every day that maybe only I notice, you know, small things, and maybe there's some big things. So I would say I really don't see my mistakes all the time as failure, as long as I'm learning from them. To me, it's about how you respond in these moments of failure that's important. Are you learning or are you growing? Are you getting stuck or are you moving forward? And really for me, earlier in my career, I was definitely getting stuck. I would beat myself up for even the smallest mistake. I can tell you right now, probably a mistake I made 20 years ago, put a typo in an email and I sent out to like my entire organization. And when they got a reply back, I read my note and I was like, oh no, I spelled this wrong. it was like I committed a crime. You know, I was so hard on myself. Or if my boss gave me feedback on a presentation or wrote something wrote over or corrected my work, I would have a visceral reaction. I get so upset because I was striving for perfection, and anything short of that was really hard for me to swallow. So I really just had to learn how to respond differently. And now I'm still hard on myself. I still have high expectations for myself, but I'm not striving for perfection. So I think that my expectations are really in line with my performance. So I think it's a matter of learning from your failures.
That's so beautiful. We have our signature question that we ask. What is one piece of actionable advice that you'd like to share with our audience?
You know, I was going to say, based on what I just said, that learning to grow and to learn from your mistakes is a big one. But I think the concept that I didn't really get out here that I like to share with other people is don't ever let anyone steal your sparkle. Going back to that authenticity, there was a time in my career about 5 or 6 years ago where I was kind of just down, and it really zapped my joy. And my team pointed out, like, where's your sparkle? And I had realized that I had let a circumstance zap me of my sparkle. And so you have to protect that with all you can. Whatever makes you you, don't let anyone take that away from you. So it takes a lot of courage to be yourself, but be brave, be you, and let your sparkle shine.
As you were saying that, all I could think about in my head was the fact that you need to have the title at Chief Mentorship Officer and then sparkle emoji.
I love it. I love it.
Well, Ebony, every episode we have a round of bite-sized questions, kind of like computer bite. And the first one is, how do you begin your morning to start the day off energized?
Oh, I have two things that I absolutely have to do. The first thing is my morning meditation. I start my day with 30 minutes of quiet time every single morning just to get grounded before the world and my day starts getting super crazy. I just like to ground myself. And then I have to eat breakfast. I do eat 3 meals a day. I like to keep my eating on schedule. And so that really helps fill me up and get me started for a good day.
Jenny knows this about me, but like, breakfast is my favorite meal of the day. Never, ever skip it. And always drag Jenny with me whenever we're in person together.
Love that. I could do breakfast for lunch, breakfast for dinner. I love breakfast. Probably my favorite meal too.
Oh, wow. We need to do some breakfast together when we're in the same place next time.
Love it.
What is one class every college student should take?
Well, okay. So I'm biased towards computer science. My degree is in computer information systems. So we're kindred spirits there as well. I love it because not only do you learn relevant tech skills, but I think it also teaches you really valuable career skills like critical thinking and communication. So I learned a lot of that through my CS courses. And if I were to throw in sort of something for extra credit, I would add finance. When I was in school, my finance and accounting classes were really hard. I thought they were like so hard, and I didn't think that I would need them too much. But now that I'm in the C-suite and an executive, I really realize how important it is that I understand the basic concepts of finance. We're running multi-billion dollar companies. And so, you know, having that skill, I think, is really valuable. So I tell the people that I mentor, like, don't underestimate the power of your, you know, finance and accounting courses. You will absolutely need them, even if you think you won't need them in the moment.
I almost feel like finance and accounting counts as STEM, right? It's math.
It totally is. And I wish I would have seen it like that back then. I was like, it's hard. I'm not going to be a banker, which I completely ended up going into banking. So I would say anything that you can do to build your financial acumen in the beginning is way better than trying to retrofit yourself.
Totally. That's great advice. Who is a trailblazer in STEM that you admire? And I hope you get the reference.
Carly is definitely someone I admire. And I'm not just saying that because of this program. I think it's really important for women and girls to see that they can take a non-traditional path to STEM. And there's really no cookie cutter way to look. You just have to be you. I also really admire my good friend, Reshma Sajani. She's the CEO of Girls Who Code, and I love what she's building there. So really, I admire women in STEM who are women in STEM. And there's so many of them. It's what I love about this is I could answer this question with probably 10 people who come to mind right now. But when I was taking my STEM courses, it was just me and a bunch of guys. And so it would have been a different question 20 plus years ago than it is today. So I'm happy that there are more of us in this field.
We're so glad to hear that. And obviously we feel the same way about both of the role models you mentioned. It's so inspiring to see people using their platforms to help not only educate others, but help them learn the stories of more of these role models so that when, you know, all of these amazing Code of Kelsey scholars are asked who is someone they admire, a trailblazer they admire, they can say Ebony Beckwith.
That's right.
What are three things always on your desk?
Oof. Okay. So first of all, I cannot live without my Post-it notes. I love to write things down and stick them where I can so I can stay motivated. I always keep a notebook handy because I am I'm visual. I take a lot of notes. I like to write them down and then I usually transpose them somewhere else. And then the third thing is usually my puppy, Bam Bam. He's usually here laying at my feet, but for this podcast, I thought it'd be best if I didn't take the risk of having him, but he is a 5-pound little Yorkie. So he's super cute.
I wish we could get a cameo from him.
Who's a mentor in tech who has helped you grow?
Oh, wow. Gosh, I've been really fortunate. I've had a lot of really great female role models. So I can think of like when I first came to Salesforce, the current company that I work for, we had the first female CIO working as chief information officer, who was my boss. Her name is Kirsten Wolberg. She went on to work at PayPal and eBay and DocuSign. Now she's on the board of directors of many companies. She is someone I've modeled my career after, the second half of my career after. She's really ambitious. She's outspoken. She's unapologetically herself. She's a really great mentor. It's kind of like I can just follow her footsteps and be led to success. And what I really love about her is that in the beginning, she would give me really great feedback that helped me develop and grow. So she wasn't just telling me the things that I wanted to hear as a manager and a mentor. She told me the things that I needed to hear that helped me grow. And I think that's a really great part of having good role models is they tell you the truth.
She sounds amazing. What is your favorite tech conference to attend?
Ooh, it's going to sound biased, but Dreamforce is my favorite conference because it's so much fun. It's like a family reunion, a rock concert, a tech conference. It's like all of these things. It's a, you know, great place to see friends that I've met over the years. I've been with Salesforce. It'll be 13 years in December. I think this will be my 11th or 12th Dreamforce. So, you know, I can tell you things that I like doing because I do them over and over and over again. And that's the one I can't wait for. So that would be my answer there.
Dreamforce is a conference that Sam and I have been dying to go to one day. So,
well, you know, this year everyone can go, you know, it's going to be virtual. So I know we're in talks about that right now. It's going to be amazing. It was really great last year too. We had to shift from this in-person model to a virtual model and it was just as amazing. So, I mean, I obviously miss seeing everybody in person, but we can still put on a great show. So everyone is welcome to attend.
Next question for you is, what do you wear to feel most powerful?
Oh, that's easy. Heels. Heels and like, and right now I'm barefoot though, so I will admit that, but I'll say lipstick. Heels and lipstick are my kind of go-tos.
That's awesome. What's a mantra that you live by?
You got this. I really do believe in positive self-talk. From a very early age, my parents would tell me very positive affirmations. You know, my mom would say if I had problems figuring something out, she'd be like, use your big brain, Ebby. And she would like inspire me to just figure it out, right? And she wouldn't just give me the answer. And even today, my husband and I, when I have to present or do something, he will text or tell me, you know, you got this, babe, you got this. And so I will repeat that in my head when I'm not feeling, you know, as confident. I'm like, no, you got this. Or I can use my big brain. There's nothing that I can't figure out as long as I have. This is why I love computer science and STEM, because it really, you tap into your own brain power and the collective power of others to solve really hard problems and simple problems. But I think there's nothing we can't figure out.
That's inspiring. I also love it because Jenny and I will constantly, before we have like a big meeting or something we're scared to do, we'll just call each other up and be like, hey, Jenny, I need you to hype me up really fast. Like, I forgot my mantra, or I don't know what to say. And we're always there to like do that for each other, which is amazing.
Amazing that you can have like each other to bounce those things off of. That's great. I also have a That's My Jam playlist that
you have to share with us.
Specifically, it's like the most embarrassing playlist, but it's specifically like if I'm walking, this is, you know, back in the old days when I was, you know, walking from building to building, or, you know, driving, or, you know, to a presentation or something that I was doing. I would just play that and it would just get me going. It would really hype me up so that I would be in that mood that I wanted to be in.
I love that. But it's
a specific playlist of songs that I know can get me from 0 to 100 really quickly.
That's amazing. What's the elevator pitch for your work?
Ooh, that's good practice. That's a good one. I would say that my role is to inspire a culture of giving back at Salesforce, which is really about making sure that all of our employees have what they need to get out to their communities and make a difference. I also make a lot of decisions about where we invest to ensure that every child gets a quality education and every young person has an equal access at success.
Well, Ebony, thank you so much for joining us on TechSetters today. TechSetters is all about getting to chat with leaders like yourself and breaking down how you got to where you are so that it doesn't feel like a career in tech, or to become as accomplished of a C-suite executive as you are is so far out of the way, and that anyone who's listening could have the potential to do it. Absolutely. So thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. If I can do it, anyone can do it. And we need more women doing it. So I'm really excited. Thank you for having me.
TechSetters is a Code with Classy podcast powered by If Then. If we can empower a woman in STEM, then she can change the world.